Welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig. We're at the Agile 2016 conference in Atlanta, Georgia in the USA. Ran into an old friend of mine, known him for a lot of years, Mark Kilby. How are you doing, Mark?
Doing well. Thanks, Greg.
Great to finally get you on the podcast. I was saying to Woody Zulu, I had a very short list of people that I still hadn't actually got on the podcast. I've had them on InfoQ interviews, and you're on that short list.
Thank you.
So great to have finally tracked you down. I think we first met, I reckon it was Salt Lake City, but it might have been the year before that.
Yeah.
You're still at Rally in those days.
It's been a while. We've known each other, yeah.
So you've been around this community for a long while. I sort of often ask people, just how did you get into this cape? What led you in the direction of Agile?
So in the late 90s, 1999 specifically, I was working at a certain publishing firm that the IT manager I had was really good at changing priorities, and all of them were still priority one, and we were doing waterfallish kind of things, and I happened to stumble across an article in IEEE Computer on lightweight methodologies. And you're talking about all these weird things like Scrum and extreme programming. And I said, well, it sounds kind of interesting. So I got Kent Beck's book just as it came out. I went, wow, this is crazy enough. I think it could work. So I started experimenting. And as I moved through different organizations, people remembered I was crazy enough to try some of this stuff. And then in 2003, I got hired in as a Scrum Master to an organization. Some former colleagues of mine remembered that, said, hey, we want to try this Agile thing. And so since about 2003, I've been coaching teams.
It's amazing how many people I run into that Kent Beck, white book for you.
Yeah, the white book.
And that still holds true today, I think. There's not a lot.
I still refer back to that book. Yeah.
Not a lot in that doesn't actually really hold true. Yeah. Good old days. We're talking about that before. When you get away with three books and and a sheet of paper. So you're at Rally for a number of years. Rally's and now CA, obviously.
Yeah.
But large organization, known for its tooling, but also known for its helping agile teams along the way.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
What was that environment like? Because there's a lot of awesome people that have been through those doors.
So I was at Rally from 2008 to early 2013, something like that. And
which was really probably the glory years.
It was. I call it the Camelot days. Yeah. So, but it was amazing. It really was an amazing place. It was the very first organization I saw that was top to bottom agile. Even the execs were doing stand-ups. And it was just amazing to see collaboration at all levels, different departments. I mean, silos were not really there. So it was. Really amazing place. You know, it's been a few years since I've been there, but I talked to, some of the CA coaches that are here, and sounds like, some of those elements are there, but of course, as you grow, there's some more structure needs to be put in place. But it was a amazing, amazing place. I mean, it was the model, and there was often with the organization release planning that we would do, we would have customers come in and observe so they could learn how to do it.
Now, you mentioned the vision where we're talking about Rally, not to mention our good friend Gene Tobacco, who unfortunately passed just recently. So being a Rally employee, any thoughts about Gene?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
without tearing up too much?
Yeah. Well, so there were actually two sessions in the Open Jam space here to remember Gene. So there was a fairly large one on Tuesday. Unfortunately, I had a session then, so I offered to run another one. And myself and Olaf Lewitz ran that one. And it was wonderful and really shocking how many influences Jean had on this community. Just with her facilitation, beyond her book, and just getting a very collaborative, experimental spirit, which just inspired so many people at this conference, even.
So. What about you personally?
Now you're going to get me tear up if I go into that. But for me, I had some opportunities off and on to work very closely with Gene. We worked on some client engagements where I could see the magic, which was impressive. So everything that she taught, she practiced. So not only listening, but listening with deep empathy to whoever was, expressing a problem. But what was really cool was I was able to teach, co-teach with her on the Collaboration Explained course. So the two-day course based on her book, and I learned even more from that. So, you know, it was one of those head explosion things. You know, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, so many things that I didn't, until I heard of her passing, I just suddenly realized how many things I got from Jean. It was just amazing.
I think actually what I've been realizing, you know, since that time, ran across her a number of times, was lucky enough to get to spend, you know, some time with her when she was out in Australia,
yeah,
you know, a couple of visits ago. But actually some of the things that are secondhand that I didn't realise that she had such a great hand in, you know, things that you learn from other places that I've then tracked back and went, oh, that came from there. So yeah, it's that secondhandness where you realise just what an influence
yeah
she had. So yeah, yeah, it's great to see people have been honouring her memory yeah here. In a tasteful, you know, not over the top way, and that's been really nice. So since leaving Rally, so now you're at?
I'm at Sonatype.
Sonatype, that's right.
Yeah, so Sonatype. So I was at Rally for 5 years. I was with Leading Agile for a year. Great place, but being a father and a husband, and having, you know, the family situation, being on the road was getting difficult. And so I was kind of looking for something that would keep me closer to home. And I had some good opportunities, but out of the blue, I was approached by Sonatype by a very interesting job ad that said, fully distributed Scrum team. I went, oh, this might be a unicorn.
I was just about to say, you stole my line.
I'm fortunate enough to find yet another amazing place.
Because that could have gone really well. Really bad.
And fortune went really well. I would give a lot of the credit to my boss, Mike Hansen. Mike is definitely a student of Lean. He's helped introduce Agile in many different places, and I don't think I work for him, I collaborate with him. So in a way I feel like I have little echoes of the Rally experience there.
That's actually a great word I hadn't thought about before, is that if more leaders would would have their staff collaborating with them, not working with them, that would make a much better place, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Right, I'm going to steal that right now.
Yeah, you can. You go for it. just credit, okay?
Yeah, some guy I met at a conference once. don't know who.
Yeah.
I did an interview with you a couple of years ago. No, it was last year, I think, because you were talking about distributed Agile. In fact, you were talking about that here as well. One of the, what do they call it?
The Audacious Salon, and then I have a workshop. So last year was an experience report on Sonatype and what were some of the characteristics that I felt allowed them to work this way. Because I don't think it's for everyone. Mm. It definitely is not. But I think under certain conditions it can work well, and there can be advantages to it. So this year, with the new Audacious Salon track, what they wanted was to get into some experimental topics, some dangerous topics that, you know, that would even have some controversy. And so I said, "Oh, I've got one." So it went very well. There was Monday and Tuesday morning. We had mostly different people in the two sessions, but some very good conversations. So we've got those notes online now. So if anyone's interested, they can go to remotelyagile.info. Mm-hmm. So that information's up there. And there's probably going to be more blogs and other things written up from that. From that, the intention was not to just end the conversation there, but who would be interested in continuing the conversations, maybe doing some other experiments. And so we already have a small community that does just that, called Virtual Team Talk. This was started by a group in Berlin, in Europe, that they started a Berlin conference last year on distributed Agile, and a lot of people just enjoyed it so much they said, okay, we can't just disperse. And so
you're saying they got together, co-located to talk about distribution,
which is funny. Yes, we all realized the irony of that. So but the funny thing was that community has grown not just in size, but in the richest of the type of groups there. Some are non-Agile teams, but distributed, but work Agile-like. So there's times where we're teaching each other different things in this space, and also experimenting with new tools or new techniques. Mm-hmm. So it's growing, and that Audacious Salon was an invitation to bring some of the Agile community mm-hmm. into that as well. And then this afternoon, I have my workshop on communication and collaboration in distributed teams. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit of a nod to some things I learned from Gene and how I've kind of translated that into the distributed space.
So, I mean, taking a little step back here for listeners who may be listening going, you know, because they've heard over the years that, you know, Scrum teams must be co-located and it's evil and all those type of things. I mean, Sonatypes is a great success story of how you actually make this work and has pushed the barriers. What are just a couple of little tips or things that you could say to our listeners here that things they might want to think about if they're grappling with that whole distributed thing?
So first thing is don't force it. You know, don't try to force people in this. It really needs to be a choice. So, and some do this when they want to work from home. Maybe they have kids. Maybe they have a sick relative or something else. And it gives them the freedom to deal with that, but at the same time feel like they're contributing. Also, I would say it's not for all organizations either. So it's getting the right infrastructure in place. It's also culturally, are you prepared to treat your remote people the same way as the people in your office? And that's probably as much of a culture shift as it is from traditional to Agile. So it's another big shift in thinking there. So I fully recommend, you know, small steps, small experiments. So can you try having like a one team disperse for like a day of a week, and then try to turn the knob up and do 2 days and 3 days and a week or so, and just see, you know, if this is working, how's it working, what can the team do as part of that, but also giving them control over those experiments, you know. So what do they need to do to bring up certain tools, collaboration tools, for instance. So example, only allowing the Scrum Master to run the collaboration tool would be a lovely failure point for that. So you want everybody to be able to fire up that tool, like a, you know, a Google Hangout or something like that.
And I guess that was going to be my point. What sort of things start to change? Because you have to break some of the rules. Mm-hmm. And I hate saying that. As it came out of my mouth, I went, there are no real rules, but the things that we learn in 101 class, like you're saying, someone should, the Scrum Master's job is to make sure that the daily stand-up happens, or mm-hmm. Make sure it gets retrospective. Whereas when you're a distributed sense, everybody has to take control, which is actually really what we were after in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, a few things we could say there. I don't know how long you would go on the podcast, but a lot of it still goes back to some of those Agile principles and some of the practices as well, where if you have a small team, then it's easy to give them control over things like what's their core working hours, so they know when they can collaborate. Let them set the meeting times where possible. Of course, if you have stakeholders involved, you got to do a little bit more coordination. But the more you can give the control you can give to the distributed teams, they'll work it out. Okay. And if there's a good product vision in place, if there's a good product owner working, you know, daily with the team, you know, the rest will take care of itself. And we've got just tremendous folks, because we hire them from all over, that, you know, they're smart enough, they're brilliant people, they work out the details, and as long as you give them the ability to do that.
So give them the environment support they need and trust them to get the job done.
I've heard that somewhere. Yeah.
It's a good saying. We should use
yeah.
that.
But one thing I want to add is, I've also, with my consulting in the past, I've worked with many co-located teams, and I used to strongly believe in face-to-face collaboration, but I think a better way, or maybe even a change, I'm not beating the drum to change the manifesto, but another way to look at that is connection. So do you have connection? And I've known some co-located teams that weren't really connected.
Yeah.
So
I think that when I was with the manifesto, I think there was things they had in their mind that they just assumed would be there, and I think connection is one of them. But,
And the technology's changed, and bandwidth has gotten better in some parts of the world, not all, but
Yeah, not our part of the world, my friend.
But anyway,
is there any? Actually, just as you were saying there before, when you were saying the things you set up, it sounds like as a coach, one of the really important things as a coach in that environment is to really set a template of the things that that the team needs to fill out, because they're going to sort some things out. I can imagine the first thing is, all right, so what tool are we going to use? Those kind of stuff. But you know, actually having that template to make sure they're working in a collaborative way is probably the important thing you need to, as either a leader or a coach, to make sure those things are happening correctly.
Yeah, you want to set a template to, you know, times of meeting, what the typical meeting agendas are for, like, planning and refinement and reviews, retrospectives. But you also want to set expectations that they'll eventually own it. And usually, I'll walk in and I'll tell the teams, my job is to put myself out of a job. I said, it's not going to happen today, not going to happen tomorrow, but I'm going to gradually let things go. And so when you start to do that, they're not surprised. So example, one of my teams, there were a few practices that we had put in place, and they were doing fairly well with it. So I just would start saying, okay, I'm not going to make it today. I got pulled in the meeting. A few days later, I can't make it today. Meeting kept going just fine. And then after a while, I said, are you guys okay running this meeting yourself? And they went, oh, yeah. Mm. Okay, great. Then why don't you guys do that? And if you need to change it, you got the retrospective.
That must be, it's kind of a little bit easier. I know I have to sometimes hide behind pot plants and things just to
sure.
Whereas I can just hit the switch and go, you know, my connection dropped, you know. How'd that go? Yeah, that's awesome. Before I kind of move on to the distributed thing, I guess the last question is that, you've done a lot of experiments. Any sort of one or two that stand out that you could share with us that may be a little more radical, or things that maybe people
on the distributed side? I guess about a year into my work with Sonatype, we looked at the Spotify papers and videos like everybody else did, and thought, the guild concept, that could be interesting. We weren't worried about emulating exactly, so we just kind of experimented getting different disciplines together, and so we formed an agile guild for people who were just interested in making change in the organization, and we formed a UX guild, and then somebody said, well, what about like other interests? And we said, like, what, you know, like outside of work interests? And we went, sure, go for it. And so somebody formed a craft beer guild, which got extremely popular. Unfortunately, that one didn't survive because
it's a little hard to do distributed, isn't it? Here's my beer.
Yeah, if you have several craft brewers who like to swap recipes, it works out.
Yeah. I guess it probably does build that, doesn't it? Because if you're interested in that, you can kind of brew it at the same time, you can taste it at the same time.
Yeah. So. But another thing, not so radical, but, you know, over time, as the team dynamics change, you know, maybe people come in and out, you'll notice maybe that a tool's not working as well for a team as it used to. So having that freedom for a team to try a new tool and do that, that's another useful thing to do. The only other surprising thing, you can survive without video on distributed teams. Mm-hmm. So we have some teams that work together very well, very rarely use video, but they've worked closely enough that they understand from voice inflection or from how people respond in code reviews, they understand how, you know, people are reacting to certain things. If we get into deep issues, then we'll turn cameras on or whatever. But I used to be a very staunch supporter of all video all the time. And it's like, nope, that's not necessarily the case either.
How do you know they've got there? Is that something that, as a coach, you're sort of monitoring those conversations, perhaps in the early days, maybe pointing things out, going, hang on a second, I think
it's
not done? Or?
So there's certainly cases like that, but when you see them facilitating each other, when you see somebody doing that, but as a team member, not a coach, like, oh, wait, hold on, I don't think we quite hit that point all the way, and it's one of the team members doing that, then it's like, all right, I can back off.
Yeah, so lead by example and then leave them behind.
Yeah, yeah.
So the other thing, you've got a large part in at the moment, is the whole community groups thing, which right. is awesome, because Agile is a community. And so it's great. And your work, so you're one of the leads of Agile Florida.
Mm-hmm. And one of the co-directors there, yeah.
Co-directors, and you also have your local group.
Agile Orlando, yeah.
Agile Orlando, yeah. Which is based out of...
out of Orlando, where the conference will be next year. So.
Yes, we keep going back there for some reason.
I have no influence over that. It's not my fault, but I'm happy. So.
And Agile Florida itself is made up of a number of groups.
Yes. Agile Florida formed about almost 4 years ago, when Orlando, which is in the central part of Florida, Tampa to sort of the west coast, and then South Florida.
More Miami area.
Yeah, more Miami, Fort Lauderdale area. We started noticing we were pulling in some of the same speakers, and also we were kind of looking for new ideas, and so we started collaborating on social media, and then we started traveling to each other's locations to see what we were doing, and then we said, hey, maybe we should do something bigger. And so we've launched a few conferences. So we have a conference that's somewhat like this conference, the Agile 2016 conference, and then also started our own open space conference. So Agile Open Florida is in its third year, will be October 7th in Orlando. The last 2 years it's been in Tampa. So now we're trying to rotate it around the member groups. And on top of that, we've added some new member groups. So we have Agile Gainesville, which is Northwest Florida. There's a Space Coast Agile. So if you go to the Kennedy Space Center, there's a group that's kind of forming there. One in Jacksonville, which is on the north side. So it's exciting to see that. And so that growth kind of led to the idea of, can we do this a little bigger? Mm. That funny scaling word came up. So yeah. So we actually talked to the Agile Alliance last year when we submitted our experience report about Agile Florida, say, hey, would it be of interest to do this a little larger? And they were enthusiastic. Unfortunately,
because the Alliance has always had a list of user groups.
Oh, they were a list, and that was it.
Yeah, which was a quite lacking in a lot of spaces, and B, I don't think a lot of people knew about it. My group's been on it forever. But.
Well, didn't know about it, and also many didn't know about some of the programs to support the groups. So what we decided is we would pitch an initiative. Agile Alliance board approved it. It launched, officially launched in January. We really got geared up about a month and a half ago before the conference. And the idea is really supporting user group leaders. Because as you know, that can be a very difficult job.
It's a lonely job.
A lonely job, yeah. So, there's some user groups that have one or two leaders, some that have a team or a board. But they all have slightly different approaches. Some have very unique ideas. We heard some of them last night when we had the kind of kickoff meeting. I had about 20, 25, 26 user group leaders from all over, from South America, from, of course, from Australia. And I even heard some unique things there. So I've got to get the notes out online just to start sharing. But the idea is...
I was madly taking notes.
Oh, yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so a few things with the initiative is, one, we have a Slack group. So the user group leaders or community leaders can always communicate. But also for new groups or groups that are struggling, because Orlando's been there twice, so we understand that. Groups that have been struggling, they can get $250 seed funding. So if it's to put up a new website, or maybe just pay for meetup for a few months, or pay for food for a few months until maybe they attract sponsors, which is what we did in Orlando and some of the other Florida groups, just to get them going or get them back on their feet. For the existing groups, we have other things such as we're providing some tickets to the On Agile conference. So that's the new online Agile conference. It started last year. The next one's coming up in late October. I forget the exact date. And there's going to be other resources coming. But the
it's
big
right in front of us, October 20.
Oh, there it is. Okay, didn't you see that sign?
Massive
okay.
sign.
Okay, too bad we're not on video. We could have just swung it over there. But the big thing is, can we get user group leaders supporting each other? Can they give ideas, or maybe just lend an ear when somebody just kind of has to vent? Because that was the most value we got out of the Agile Florida leadership, is just being able to have somebody that empathize with what you're trying to do, trying to help people learn Agile in your community and what were some innovative ways. And we're hoping some new collaborations come out of it as well. So it's not just the group on its own.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think, I'm a member of a number of the groups in my part of the world. And sometimes you'll just see their next meetup pop up and you go, that's a great idea, or I haven't heard of it.
Exactly,
that.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things.
Yeah, there's a few of us that we sign up on each other's meetups. It's like, oh, what is that? What are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah, well, my excuse, I travel a lot, so, you know, it's nice to know when the meetup's on in that town.
But, yeah.
So I think it's a great initiative because that's one of the things I've always thought. And really seeing your experience report last year was what kind of drove that home, is that, yeah, we really should. We're about collaboration, yet we collaborate in our own little groups.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of like a meetup group for the meetup groups.
And even to run this initiative, it's collaborative. It's me, it's Stephanie Davis, who's on the Agile Alliance board with you, and Ryan Durrell, who's also with us on Agile Florida. So we have experience in doing this, but we hope to bring more leaders, not just us, to kind of help own this and help bring other leaders and just build some better collaborations to help people really be successful with Agile.
So what's your hope in, we're Agile and we don't like to go too far ahead, but if we're sitting here in the next, not the next Orlando conference, but the one in 2019 or whatever it is, what should we be talking about? What would success look like?
Oh, wow. I'm just trying to get past today's workshop, so I hadn't thought that far ahead, but I think what would be exciting is if we heard some of the user groups maybe launching more regional conferences, because I know a lot of people can't make it to this one. It's an expensive conference, but you're bringing in big name speakers, you have a nice venue, and there's a price tag to that. But it would be great to have more of the regional conferences. Some of the groups already put on some nice local conferences, but it'd be great to spread that around because there's still a lot of people out there that could use some help.
Mm. And I guess the other thing you did mention about the Alliance as well, not only the seed funding, but a program that's been around for a long time is also being able to get funds to help bring speakers.
To bring speakers in, to set up your own conference, but not many people are aware of that. So hopefully with the new website they have, that will help too.
Yeah. So just while we are talking about that, if there are user group leaders around the world, it's not just a North America thing, which is sometimes I think.
We already have leaders online from Malaysia, from the UK, certainly US, but we welcome all.
How do they get involved with that? There's a site in the Agile Alliance, right?
So if you go to agilealliance.org. Resources, and under resources you'll see initiatives, you'll see the community support group as well as those other initiatives that their user group can take advantage of.
So we are here at the conference. Anything that's just kind of taken your eye, anything you've learned over the last few days?
Well, as I mentioned, Gene's influence was amazing. What really shocked me was not only the concern around distributed Agile, but the interest in really making it work. I mean, there's a lot of people that are, they're kind of forced into that situation, but they still see some benefits and want to try to make it work. So we'll see what comes in coming conferences if we have more to it than that.
Are there any good resources out there in distributed Agile for people to go look at? I mean, I know there's been a few books written on this in the past.
There's been a few books, and...
But any of them actually...
Well, as I was starting to get ready for this conference, I could not really find that resource. So I know of some, and I started just putting a page on my blog. So if folks go to remotelyagile.info, that list is there. They'll actually see some of the information from the sessions on distributed Agile here at the conference. And we'll be pointing to all kinds of resources through that URL.
Excellent. Yeah. And if people want to know more about you, Mark, where can they go?
You can catch me on Twitter as mkilby, K-I-L-B-Y. You can go to my website as well, markkilby.com. I blog there, try to get it there more frequently, mostly about distributed teams, sometimes other topics related to coaching and Agile.
Excellent. Yeah. Just to wrap up, you obviously listen to the podcast. We like to finish off with a little saying, Viva la Revolution. So would you join in with one of those with me?
Sure.
Yeah, Viva la Revolution.
I got one more time.
On the three. One, two, three.
Viva la Revolution.
Thanks for catching up with you.